statement to that effect that's convincing, it's hard to recommend Taiwan as a good economic partner, which actually leads me sort of back, not really to agreeing with Bob, that an FTA could be hard because of the negotiation side, not so much the Trump administration's initial interest, but whether we then get problems on the Taiwanese side.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I'm glad Derek eventually came back to the right side.
Yeah, I'm always on the right side.
Exactly.
That's American exactly Enterprise right. Institute on the right
side.
Side.
Yeah. No, I agree with Derek and others, especially when I talk to some people in Taiwan. The BIA doesn't sound as dramatic or as important, and it is not as important as an FTA in terms of its comprehensive breadth and all that. So I understand that, and the people in Taiwan tell me they need something really sexy, really important to really get people to want to do reform. Otherwise, they just won't do it. Well, if you won't do it, you know, it's basically, as Derek is saying, you really are building a hole for yourself. And this hole is getting deeper and deeper, and there isn't, I didn't sense as much of, I didn't really get the sense of urgency in Taiwan sometimes among some of the people I talked to. Oh, we get a few more years to wait, it's all right, we're doing okay. So, yeah, it's 0% growth, but now we have 1%. We might even go to 1.5, who knows? So I think that's a false sense of sort of complacency, because if you look at the long term, the deeper the hole you dig, the harder it is to get out of it. And so I think it's time to sort of stop digging it and start filling it up with important, difficult things you have to do, even if you don't get the dramatic sort of FTA, TPP, and so on that you want to join in order to get the reforms, you might say, sort of agreed to by the political, the public, and so on. So I think it's really important to get the sense of urgency without having to go too ambitious in terms of what you're doing. And the second thing is, I think a BIA has that exactly that sort of impact that Derek talked about, which is, if you do a BIA you can negotiate, there are many different parts of it, there's not one thing, it's fairly broad, you can do different things with it. But the key thing there is, if you start to open up the investment environment for foreign companies, you then create that environment of competition that forces your companies to really compete as well. And that's good. It's not bad, as Derek pointed out. I think doing that, again, is again limited in terms of its impact on the entire economy, but if you start doing that, inviting foreign investors to come in, who are competitive in different areas, that actually helps your own economy become more competitive and smarter in its growth.
I'm going to play the role of the scissors contrarian, right? One of my absolutely favorite roles. I actually am going to push back in a couple of areas here. The first is, I actually do feel as if the Tsai government is deeply serious about reform and about changing the way in which Taiwan has conducted its trade policy. I agree implicitly with my friends and colleagues up here that during the Ma government, domestic economic reform was put on the sidelines in the interests of engagement with China, and Chinese economic engagement was viewed to be the primary catalyst for growth. But of course, Taiwan took 8+ years off in respect to reform. I would point to the ongoing street fight in the Lifai Yuan over the removal of barriers to agricultural imports from Japanese prefectures around Fukushima, and the degree to which the Tsai government is investing political capital in returning Taiwan to a balanced trade relationship with the Japanese, understanding full well that in so doing, they then maximize the opportunity that Mr. Abe and his colleagues will consider more expansive trade engagement with Taiwan. My expectation would be that once that has been completed, that Taiwan will turn its attention to thornier issues in the US-Taiwan trade relationship, and that, again, the Tsai government will play proactive ball in respect to its own trade posture, the message that it sends, its willingness to make hard changes unilaterally, to inject a a positive feeling into the relationship, as well as improve competition and services for the people of Taiwan. The second point I'd like to make, and this is sort of a pet peeve over the years, I really, really don't like us. I don't like a debate that talks us down from ambition within the Taiwan relationship. I really don't. I feel very strongly that in security, that in trade, in almost every area of US-Taiwan relations, we get into this here in Washington, mostly within the government. We get both the political as well as the permanent bureaucracy. We negotiate with ourselves, often driven by fear over the reaction of the Chinese or others. And we talk ourselves out of more ambition in the US-Taiwan relationship, and I don't like it. I understand that it may be difficult to push for an FTA, but we should anyway. I understand that the politics of it here are going to be very tricky in the first year and a year and a half. Mr. Trump does have to demonstrate to non-coastal America that he was very serious when he said our trade posture would change, and we're going to learn more about that in the coming months and over the next year. Bob's 100% right. But it does leave an opening for it for the FTA, and as difficult as it would be, I certainly feel strongly that we will be pushing very hard for an FTA to be considered. And while a BIA too would be nice, we don't consider it a second prize just because an FTA is too much for Taiwan. We feel that Taiwan absolutely should be considered amongst every other major trading partner in the world, specifically in Asia, or FTA, and as a consequence, we should push for it and not talk ourselves out of it.
I have a question for you, Rupert. Let's say there's somebody in the Trump administration in a few months. say there was somebody in the Trump administration in a few months who said, I've heard or I've talked about or I've read or whatever, what about Taiwan as an FTA partner? We're doing these protectionist things with regard to China or Mexico or TPP or whatever it may have you. You want to do something positive, what about Taiwan? And the response is, have the Taiwanese ever done anything hard with regard to the US-Taiwan economic relationship? Why should we believe this would work?
Yeah.
Now, you just endorsed a different approach from the new government, and you know more about it than I do. But what I didn't hear you say is something was done that was hard that matters to the US.
I think I did. Actually, the point I was making about the change in the Fukushima and then what would come next is exactly to your point. I actually agree with the direction that you're going.
Mm-hmm.
If Taiwan is unprepared to demonstrate that it's willing to make unilateral changes on difficult issues that negatively impact the overall relationship, but let's call a spade a spade, I'm talking about pork here, 100%. If they're unprepared to do that unilaterally and demonstrate to the United States that this is a different team on the island, this is a different day. I agree with you. Why should we? If they're not prepared to be serious, why should we? And I don't quibble with that. What I'm saying about FTA is on the back of my belief that they get that.
Okay.
And that is an expectation I hold. I might be disappointed, Derek.
But so the Trump administration could look for an action on pork, for example, and say, aha, this is we're being signaled that an FTA could actually be easier than Bob understandably fears
yes.
it will be. All right, so that's a concrete thing that we might look for in the next 6 months.
It's what I'm looking for.
Right, and it doesn't have to be pork, obviously, but that's the clearest signal.
It's a signal of seriousness. Okay. Yep.
And I would add just one more thing. That is, I agree. The final goal is something in the realm of an FTA and so on. And I'm not looking at it now. All I'm saying is you walk before you run.
Yes.
And the BIA could be the test, another test of the determination of Taiwan to restructure and to change its investment environments in a serious way. And that would add on to the credibility of Taiwan that then would become something to do that pushes it towards an FTA.
Well, that's great. And the best part of having such great panelists is that I don't have to do any work at all. I have a monitor.
Russell, can I ask a question?
You want to ask a question? There you go.
You don't mind.
Bob would like to close the event.
since we're really getting into this, I'm curious from those of you who really are more ingrained in trade negotiation, can a BIA negotiation, if it's uncompleted, be folded into an FTA?
Sure.
It could be, conceptually?
Yeah. No, that's really, Bob mentioned this before. There is an investment chapter in most FTAs. Now, you are going to have, obviously, you have a different constituency in an FTA and a BIA. So you could, if you say, hey, we're going to upgrade this, which is kind of a weird word, we're going to transform this from a BIA to an FTA, you are going to get people, because the FTA is a treaty, your BIA is called agreement for a reason,
yeah.
You are going to get new political factors saying, wait, that thing you agreed on the BIA, we're not voting for the FTA unless you change that. So the negotiation part of this is not the hard part. It's the politics that can be hard.
Yeah.
If you think you're in a close vote or there's somebody, you know, we've done this, of course, in U.S.-Taiwan for years. If some agriculture person is upset, you know, you could hold things up. But it's not difficult in terms of negotiation to go from one to the other.
Thank you.
I mean, I have other questions, but what I'd like to do is to open it up for Q&A. And so with what time we have left, please raise your hand. Please identify yourself, your name, and your affiliation. And address your question to either the panel, the entire panel, or the specific panelists.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Smith from Mayor Brown, and I have a question for Mr. Scissors. And I just wanted to follow back up on your point as we talk about the concept of FTAs or BIAs. We saw the signal from President Tsai yesterday that she's interested in some of those agreements, and yet very much at the very same time, on the very same day, the Taiwan press is focused on the LY rushing on legislation to force out Uber. And so what kind of signal does that send for starting off with the new administration when, as you say, if you can't, if pork is the bar and maybe Uber is something less than that, what sort of signal does that send for kicking off this relationship?
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, the great thing about being in a think tank is I don't have to care about anything. I don't care about Uber. I just don't at all. It's never come up politically in my, I do a lot of work on the Hill. Obviously, agriculture comes up all the time. Uber does not. Nobody cares. But if it's a sign of there are going to be a whole range of Taiwanese services that employ people and that are politically powerful, and you know we're going to come down hard on any competition with those services, now it's a disaster. So Uber by itself really doesn't mean anything. It's not going to affect the relationship because there's no political constituency that cares about Uber unless it's tied to we can't negotiate in services with you. And if we can't negotiate in services, then Bob automatically wins the FTA argument because the U.S. is just going to drop. Okay, we're not, forget it. And services, the services are why I don't like the TPP. And we're not going to bother with trying to have an FTA negotiation with any government that doesn't like services competition, because we didn't used to have to do that, and we're better at goods, and all the things that governments like Taiwan, not just Taiwan, say. So what I want, as I said in my remarks, being completely ignorant of Taiwanese politics, almost completely ignorant, what we need from the Taiwanese government is something like, here's why Uber is different. We don't mean this about financial services. We don't mean this about healthcare services. And if they can't do that, if Uber isn't different, now there's a problem.
Hi, my name is Dong Guiyu with China Review News Agency of Hong Kong. My question is for Looper. I still remember during this year's in Defense Industry Conference, you mentioned that it's possible for the United States to sell another round of arms to Taiwan before President Obama leaves the office. So do you still think so? And yesterday, in the seminar of Project 2049, Deputy Assistant Secretary Denmark touched upon this issue and saying that the U.S. has 14 billion arms sales to Taiwan from since 2010, and plus 6.2 billion commercial transaction. So, can we anticipate more arms sales during Trump's administration? Thank you.
To ask our moderator if that falls into the
not necessarily in the purview of the. It's completely up to your discretion whether or not you want the answer to maybe take it offline so that we can address a econ specific.
Why don't we talk about this afterwards?
Okay, great. Yes, there you go.
I'm happy to talk about it.
Yeah, no, I think so. Yeah. Let's just keep this specific to the econ issue right now, but. I'm sure you'll,
I'm happy to chat about it just afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hi, Garrett Van der Weest. Thanks for an excellent discussion. Really great to see the dynamics here between you. I want to pick up on one of the points that Robert made in the very beginning, TPP-11. Do you see a viability for that? Is there life for TPP without the US? Of course, we wouldn't have to worry about it then, and we wouldn't have this great discussion, but is that in theory a possibility?
Well, definitely in theory it's a possibility. In practice, I think there is discussion, as I said earlier, again, talking to Vietnam, Singapore, and the Japanese in Beijing, the Japanese ambassador there. There clearly is now thought that, especially if the United States were to actually withdraw officially from the TPP-12, then it actually takes away the barrier because of the 85% requirement, GDP, etc. So if the United States is not in it, then theoretically it becomes even more so a possibility. The only question now is who's going to take the leadership in actually maybe having to renegotiate some of it, tweaking it. Is it still worthwhile for a number of the countries in there without the United States in terms of the access to the US market? Is it still something worth doing? And I think what I'm hearing, again, it's not my personal opinion, what I'm hearing is that after 5 or 6 years of really hard work, a lot of political capital on the part of the Japanese Prime Minister and so on, that there is now serious thinking about it. Now, whether or not that moves forward, I don't really know, but if the U.S. does withdraw, it eliminates that sort of barrier that was there before, then TPP-11, they'll talk. In fact, interestingly, when I was in China, I was watching Chinese television, and they were actually saying, and I'd known a lot of these when I was there, because I'd been traveling for about a month, but the Chinese television was actually saying that Prime Minister Abe was going around talking to other TPP members about maybe going forward with TPP-11 in Lima and other places, and they thought that this was conspiracy. The Japanese are conniving to keep the United China out, and so on and so forth. So it was in a negative light. But what I saw, heard, was that that in fact the Chinese do believe that they have seen signs where Prime Minister Abe seemed to be taking up the mantle and trying to move the thing forward. And I certainly think that Singapore, Australia, others might certainly look at it as well. So again, I don't know practically whether it will continue, but there is talk about it, there is thinking, and you know, and my own view is that they should go ahead with it.
Can I add a quick something? I'd also add that Abe sees the commitments that Japan has made as an important domestic tool for reform of his own economy. Mm-hmm. And for this not to go through actually has a direct impact on his ability to reform Japan and some of the vested interests that we've been discussing that exist in Taiwan or the United States, but also exist quite brilliantly on the island of Japan. So it makes perfect sense that he would continue to push that.
We have time for a few more questions. Okay. Let's go this, and then why don't we take let's take this as the last set of questions. These three individuals. You guys can handle that, right?
All right. So my name is Hao Kai Pai. I'm from AEI. And so my question is
to the entire panel.
Since Taiwan...
He's not a plant, I didn't know. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so my question is, since Taiwan is so embedded in the global value chain, so under the current like sort of anti-trade sentiment, the U.S. especially against China, like what would be some of the upcoming problems do you see like that Taiwan would face? And is there any sort of like a short-term measure? Because of course, like as you guys mentioned, the FTA or BIA would take a long time. So are there sort of a more immediate, maybe policy tools that Taiwan can use sort of to mitigate the damage that might come to the sort of de-globalization that might happen?
We'll take all three of them and then
have them. I am Ben, I'm from the Carnegie Endowment. So my question is, why has pork become such a big obstacle
in promoting U.S.-Taiwan economic relations? I mean, I know it has to do with rectopamine and the health risks associated with it, but there are other aspects of economic relations that really matter.
Did you all bring overnight gear? We might be here for a while.
Sleeping bags in the back here, and everyone all.
Yeah, you know, okay, cool.
And one last question in the back.
David Parker from CSIS. Given the likelihood of a more tense U.S.-China relationship, what do you think the implications of this might mean for Taiwan's economy, for the prospects of FTAs with additional Southeast Asian countries beyond Singapore, and since you mentioned it earlier, the prospects for attracting additional investment from European countries?
Yeah. Okay, so three questions. Value chain, pork, and FTAs beyond Singapore.
I'm sorry, can you ask the last question again? I'm sorry, I didn't wrap myself around that.
Remember pork in his brain.
I'm still reeling.
Given the likelihood that we'll have a more tense U.S.-China relationship, what do you think this might mean for a few things? Taiwan's economy more generally, potential FTAs with additional Southeast Asian partners, and since it was mentioned earlier, sort of attracting investment from external partners, most notably European countries.
So you mean tense as in cross-strait relations, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
And just whoever would like to start.
I'll start.
Okay. I'll start.
Well, I'll leave the pork question to Rupert. But I think in general, I was talking with Mike Conti earlier today, just now. You know, I think in general, this is an answer to both the first and the third question. I think overall speaking, if you see and sort of anti-globalization in Europe, United States, you see increasing protectionism, I think that bodes ill for the world economy as a whole, including Taiwan. And Parker's question was with U.S.-China relations, the same thing. In other words, if U.S.-China relations deteriorates in terms of trade and it affects trans-Pacific trade, if it affects Chinese economic growth, and so on, it will have an impact on Taiwan as well, indirectly, because of the global supply chain that you talked about. And so I think that's, in general, the context of what's happening across, especially the advanced economies, who are the major markets for the world. I mean, we buy a lot of things in Costco, Walmart, etc. And you know, if that slows down for different reasons, because of trade tariffs, tariffs going up or whatever else, then I think it's going to affect Taiwan. Now, what can Taiwan do? I don't know. I think the whole world will be affected. I'm not sure if you have one particular thing you can do right away. The only thing I would hope is that it does increase the sense of urgency that you need to get beyond your model, current model of just sort of sitting there waiting for things to happen, waiting for pork to be done, you know, etc. And sorry, I didn't mean to intervene, but you know, I think it does. I would get a greater sense of urgency from that to do basic structural reforms. You can do single things. But that's not going to solve the problem in the long term. You know, you could do this or that, a little bit fixed here or there. But I think fundamentally, Taiwan needs to really start thinking very hard about restructuring its investment environment, restructuring its industries, making it more competitive, and all of those things that will not be seen right away, the impact, but will eventually over the years, you know, 4, 5, 10 years, bear fruit, I think, for Taiwan.
First, the incredibly perceptive question from AI. Taiwan is stuck. If there's a, you know, think of this as kind of a 2x2 matrix, which is, are deglobalization steps going to be radical or mild? And then are they going to be accompanied by forward steps or not accompanied by forward steps at the same time? Taiwan and other countries and supply chains are going to be hit by uncertainty. We're already seeing this in currency movements, regarding sort of whether the U.S. shift is going to be sharp or not sharp. So uncertainty is going to harm Taiwan anyway. If there's a sharp shift, there's nothing that, and the correct response to that is exactly what Bob just said, which is make yourself as attractive as possible. That's how you fight uncertainty. You create international uncertainty, you create domestic certainty. Now, if the uncertainty resolved itself into aggressive U.S. steps on deglobalization, Taiwan's just stuck, and they're stuck because they hitched their wagon on the Chinese train, and then the U.S. is going to go after China in that case of aggressive attack on deglobalization. You know, I gave a speech at the Heritage Foundation 6 years ago saying, you guys are stupid, you need to see that this train is coming. And so at that point, I would just blame a series of bad Taiwanese political decisions. There's nothing you can do if the U.S. is really going to attack trade deficits as harming the United States or something along those lines. But if in the case of just maybe they will, maybe they won't, and Trump is really talking about health care for 2017, the uncertainty is still harmful, and Bob's response is the correct one. I'm not sure I understand. Are you talking about what Taiwan should do or what the U.S. should do? What I'm trying to...
It's kind of a question of if sort of there's a more intenser U.S.-China relationship, mm-hmm. Taiwan to some extent gets caught into that. But how does that influence both the sort of climate of uncertainty, meaning what are European investors actually looking for?
So what is everybody thinking about with regard to Taiwan? Yeah, all the value chain countries face the same. So Japan, too, Korea, Malaysia to some extent, the Vietnamese, their aspirations at least, face the same problem, which is if the U.S., we've seen this from Ross, we've seen it from Navarro, we've seen it from the president-elect, the U.S. really thinks that trade surplus countries are hurting the United States, and that they're cheating or they outbargained us, and we need to reset those relationships, the supply chains are going to get destroyed. Now, that's a radical departure from American policy. There's going to be opposition within the United States. You don't just snap your fingers and do that. But that there's all the supply chain countries are stuck. There's going to be disinvestment. They're going to be shunned, because their comparative advantage is going to be taken away by the United States, a completely different American view. I mean, Asia still exports to final demand, and the largest source of final demand. But the world trading system exists because the United States runs $500 trillion trade deficits every year in goods. That's why it exists. People don't do things we want them to do because we're so smart and nice and kind and they love us. They do it because they want the market. And if the market's not in play, the supply chain countries are all really in a lot of trouble. Now, they're going to push back, among others. So if it has to do with uncertainty, what you do in addition to what we've all been talking about, but most recently Bob, is you reach out to your other partners. So in addition to the domestic restructuring, you don't wait, you don't be passive. You go to the Europeans and say, look, you know, if the U.S. is really going to take these actions, the whole world trading scene is going to reorganize. But if they don't, if they're picking and choosing certain sectors they want to retaliate, selective applications of reciprocity, whatever might be the case, things that I've tried to push instead of zeroing out the bilateral trade deficit with China, then, you know, Taiwan can still play this role. And let's rethink of what the world looks like together. You know, what would you want, how would you want to change your relationship with Taiwan in that environment? I think, you know, your questions turn out to be overlapping a lot. I think the key problem at the beginning is going to be the uncertainty problem. Taiwan is going to get, if border tax adjustment is passed, for example, and that would be the thing that's easiest to do, that's comprehensive. You try to put 45% tariffs to the Congress, you're going to have a long debate over that. But corporate tax reform, everybody wants it. They're just arguing over the details. That's going to, you know, border tax adjustment is going to hit the Chinese first, which means it's going to hit everyone in that supply chain later. But that gets back to what Taiwan's going to have to do is think about investing in the U.S. rather than exporting in the U.S. It's a change in the economy. Other than domestic adjustment, I think Taiwan needs to be much more active in thinking about new partners. If the U.S. is going to interrupt supply chains, to some extent, supply chains serving Europe would be at least a solve, you know, to a bomb for the BALM. I keep thinking of words with unpronounced L's, which makes it very difficult. Those are the two things I would do on the Taiwanese side. You can't deal with a hard U.S. turn against globalization. Taiwan just can't do it. The time passed years ago. But uncertainty or a softer turn against globalization, you have the domestic reform, and you're going to have to pick out, all right, think of it strategically about who are our good partners in this new environment. Is it India? Is it Indonesia? Where do we go from here? And try to be more aggressive in outreach to those particular countries.
Thank you. I'll quickly start with Paul. I'm quite humbled because we have one of the our longest-standing trade negotiators, Mick Ruzicka, sitting right here in the front row, who has very real scars on this issue over the years. But it's not to make light of it. It is actually a genuinely very serious matter for us. In no order of priority, they relate to past commitments made by Taiwan that were not fulfilled, They relate to, as we've discussed on the panel here, the seriousness of Taiwan's intent to liberalize and open its economy and follow a global rules-based architecture for its economy that allows the free flow of goods and services. We also have that's elevated this issue of the politics of agriculture in the U.S. Congress and the pressure that it's placed specifically on USDR, and the combination of all of that, this has really created, has really pushed this issue into the primary litmus test for the seriousness of Taiwan intent, which was touched on. So I think, did I get that pretty right?
Sound science.
Yeah, you know, and that's what I mean by global rules and regulations. I mean, it's rules-based, sound science, in a manner in which they do in some areas, but don't in others. It's not consistent. This issue must be dealt with. There's no getting around it. If it can be dealt with appropriately and properly, and as Rick points out, science-based solutions that are accepted globally, then Taiwan will, in my view, have gone a long way to telegraph the seriousness of intent in also tackling other barriers to a freer and more open relationship, not just with the United States, but with other trading partners. I don't want to add anything to what my colleagues have said here, and I absolutely associate what they've said. I just quickly add, Taiwan, a primary challenge for the Taiwan economy is moving up the value chain. It's something that's been discussed a great deal by many commentators over the last decade. There are some outstanding Taiwan economies, but still, principally, Taiwan is in the business of manufacturing other people's intellectual property and integrating it. And it worked for a while, but it's increasingly not working. And it is not the way to create increasing wealth and opportunity for your country and its citizenry over time. They've got the semiconductor space right. You're seeing significant investment as we move up the value chain there, 450 millimeter. The chip companies, led by TSMC, are definitely heading in the right direction. But what else? Where are the other areas of dynamism going to come from? People have some ideas. They are, for the most part, still ideas at this juncture, and we'll have to see how that plays out. On the latter question, the flow of money, investment, this to me is a somewhat more pessimistic picture, but I would say, let's look at the M&A activity on Taiwan. It's pretty depressed. And companies, investors, private equity, institutional investors can go in and buy companies. They have a devilishly difficult time getting their money out. And that's understood. I'd also encourage you to look at private equity investment in the region and look how low on that list Taiwan is. Private equity is typically associated. The more significant private equity flows into an economy, typically that is reflective of how healthy and open that economy is. Taiwan's very low. It is hard to do transactions in Taiwan. There is this parochial approach to this area that is a disincentive to invest on the island, both in the companies that are already there, in new companies, and the overall future for the island. I would hope that will change, but that is the reality today.
Rupert just spurred a couple thoughts really fast to improve my answer to the last question. Not just outreach on countries, but outreach on sectors. In other words, instead of targeting a partner, say we really need to change, for example, how capital, sort of the rules under which capital can leave the island, which would encourage investment and so on. That's another Taiwanese response to getting nailed on the global supply chain. Rather than picking out countries, pick out a sector. But the other thing I want to say to kind of motivate this, or end this discussion on a motivational note, Bob's been talking about urgency, is everyone wants to move up the value chain. Everybody, no matter where they are in the value chain, wants to move up the value chain. Taiwan has enormous competition in this area, as is well known, and the principal competitor already has FTAs with the United States and Europe. So if you're not motivated by that, then you're not really serious about moving up the value chain.
Okay, well, although we went over the allotted time, I think we all agree that the discussion has been very enlightening. I'm glad that my workload was lessened as a result of this great discussion. There's a lot of good ideas on the table, so please join me in thanking our panelists today. And I would also add that in closing out 2016, we have our last seminar next week on Wednesday, which is a special event on womenomics in Taiwan and Japan. And so we highly encourage you to please register if you haven't done so already. And we'll be sending out a reminder email about that fairly soon today. So, thank you.
Thank you. Oh, boy. It's a little bit to see. Thank you. Sure. We seem to have an engaging discussion anyway, right? Yeah.